to see your face. Pass me by the crowds of people, the priest who sing your praise. Hello, my name is Shane Eidelman, and I'm the pastor of Westside Christian Fellowship in Leona Valley, California. It is my personal heart and goal for you to see truth through a biblical perspective. I hope that you enjoy this segment of Eidelman Unplugged. What's interesting is, like you said, God uses our experiences. And I think most people are beginning to realize the absolute vital, I don't even know what the word is, the incredible importance of taking care of our body. I mean, this is how we minister. This is how we parent. I mean, I think it's overlooked. And so when I became a pastor, I started to talk about this a little bit. And then the fear of man. Because people say, you know what, pastor, that's not that important. Just stick with, you know, just theology. While this person's 80 pounds overweight and struggles with type 2 diabetes, and they want. And so I just saw so many parallels, and I really felt God wanted me to get back and talk about this because it's so important.
Right, and the church is it's. Over the years, I've spoken in many churches on health and nutrition, yeah. And it's kind of It's been one of those subjects that they just really don't like.
Don't
touch my sacred cow. Don't talk to me about diet. And for the most part, I'm not trying to come down on the body, they'll give it lip service, and they'll say, "Well, God just He loves me the way I am. Yeah. Don't talk to me about that." And it's very hard for them to. Really see, you know, the importance of that. I mean, Paul talks about, you know, disciplining himself. You know, he's fighting. He's going to win that race. He's going to discipline himself. He's going to not be taken out by anything. So all things are lawful, all things are not expedient, but I'm not going to be brought under the subjection of any.
Yeah.
So anyway, people they don't take things as serious as Paul. And, well, that's for Paul, not for the body of Christ, you know. But no, the Lord calls us to be disciplined ones, disciples. He didn't send us out to make believers. He actually said, go out and make disciples.
And I mean,
so
go ahead. I was going to say, if you look at that verse, you know, when he said, "I discipline my body daily and bring it into subjection," you know, obviously there's spiritual disciplines and things. But if he's not talking about the lust of the flesh, I don't know what he's talking about. Obviously, I discipline my body and I bring it under control. So when I preach to others, I'm not disqualified because that can be gluttony, addiction. So, I mean, this is such a big topic, and I've seen it where it actually affects who people are at a very deep level. You know, they struggle with anger. Holy Spirit, take this anger away. Well, you need to get off that 500 milligrams of caffeine and this junk food and get some sleep, some good sleep, deep sleep. And I mean, there's so many things that you could look at there.
Right. And the church, they don't talk about eating. They definitely don't talk about fasting, and they don't talk about gluttony.
Oh, true. Yeah.
And they really don't think about that. At one point, it's not in the scriptures, but you know, they were talking about the seven deadly sins. I think the first one is called, was it gastromargia or something? That's gluttony.
Yeah.
And, they don't think about the gluttony that was talked about in the Bible. Gee, our son is a glutton and a drunkard. Well, we bring him out, and if he doesn't repent, he's going to be stoned. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a few other references, you know, in the, fasting again. I know I'm preaching to the choir here because you're well versed on all that, but
what's good for people to hear.
Yeah. The body never thinks about that as far as taking care of who they are. Again, Paul talks about your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, and we need to maintain that. We need to take care of that. And he who defiles the temple, God will himself destroy.
True. Yeah. Well, let's get into this. I think I'm going to title it something like the final, or finally, the truth on fitness.
I know it's a little bold. And I actually have some notes, so I want to make sure I don't miss anything. We stay on track. And I mean, each of these topics could be a podcast in and of themselves. So I'm thinking maybe just the key points on each one to make sure we get through everything. And again, I'm just want to highly recommend The Lost Art of Fasting in a Gluttonous World. I think that would really help a lot of people because you offer some solutions on that. But number one, why is there so much conflict when it comes to the area of health and fitness and dieting? You know, you've got paleo, you've got carnivore, you've got whole plant-based only. And I, you know, me and you've talked about this. We're on the same page. I mean, biblically speaking, if people would just stick to the Bible, you know, biblically speaking, you know, there's some freedom there and not getting caught up in all the different crazes, because a 30-day or 60-day diet is not going to fix a lifelong problem. You know, it's a lifestyle change.
That's right. And I kind of got into this, the backdoor approach. I wasn't planning on doing this. I think I told you before, I wasn't planning on being a doctor.
Right.
That's a long story, but it was the Lord, and the Lord brought me into that. I didn't want to be a doctor, but now looking back, thank you, Lord.
Yes.
He knew exactly what I was supposed to do. But in that journey, and part of that is in the book, as far as what I went through is experiencing things with patients. I would pray for patients. I would try to figure out what was going on. The traditional approach didn't have an answer. The Lord would just kind of drop a little tidbit into my head, and wondering where that came from. That's kind of how I got into integrative medicine.
Yeah.
Functional medicine. So once I would apply this, the patient would get better, and then I would have to think about it. Well, what else don't I know? Oh, Lord, can you teach me?
Yeah.
So, he's the engineer of our body, and he's the one that designed our diet. And what I try and do with my patients, you've been indoctrinated, you've been fed a lie. This thing that we call food really isn't food. It's fake food.
Yeah, it is.
And it's a lot of chemicals. It's made by food scientists. For the most part, they're not Christians. They don't believe in God, and they don't realize what they're doing, and we're going to make it better. Okay,
It's
well, they
money.
never did.
It's money, money. Everything from seed oils to
Yeah,
processed.
and again, yeah, no, there's a lot of that. I mean, they're very well intentioned,
True.
but when I got into medicine, I didn't know the history of medicine so much, and I assumed that everything was up and up as far as how we were taught, what we were taught, science behind it. I mean, we have a lot more science now than when we did.
Well, you're thinking there. When it comes to the diet, though, would you say then, you know, the life-giving food, whole plant-based, even meat and dairy is controversial, but biblically speaking, you know, if it's clean, and then you've seen the studies. There are studies out there that show moderate clean meat consumption is good, but then you know, you watch it, Forks Over Knives and one of these other documentaries. I'm just like, how do they get conflicting information? Are they looking at different things?
Okay, yeah, they're making something that's simple very complex. Okay, the human body is very versatile, it's very adaptable, and if you study people's groups around the world, it has been done going back to the 30s and 40s. What's his name? The dentist that went
Oh
around. You know who I'm talking about?
yeah. I forgot his name too, but I'm sure we'll both.
Yeah, but it's
I keep thinking of Herbert Shelton, but he was a fasting.
No, he was more fasting, but it'll come to me afterwards. But anyway, he went around and studied all these people's groups, and this is back in the 30s, published, I think, early 40s. And his conclusion was the American diet is way too processed. Okay, so all of these people had different diets, they had different lifestyles, but they didn't have our diseases. So we have people that have, they're more carnivore, and then there are people that are more herbivore. And then we have people that are kind of both, like, like the Hansa people, the tribes over in Tanzania. And half the year they're more carny and the other herbs. And it's interesting. They're healthy. And
Yeah, I remember one group he studied, their diet was mainly sweet potatoes and not much meat at all. And you would think, oh my goodness, all these carbs. But they're also very active. I think we forget that too.
Right.
Not to interrupt, but I looked at my watch yesterday and I got in a full 1 mile of walking. I'm like,
Really?
no, that's all, that's it for the whole day.
Really?
I'm like, that's not good. I shoot for, 10,000 steps, and it's just,
Right.
if you're not, making it a priority. I think my point was a lot of these people were very active.
I try to look at it from the Lord's perspective. He gave us all of this food for health. He designed it for our body, and if we follow those guidelines, we usually don't have a problem. What did Jesus eat? Oh, well,
Fish, bread.
was he a vegetarian? No, he wasn't a vegetarian. I don't have anything against vegetarianism, but there's some little caveats. But Jesus ate he meat he ate meat, some lamb, some beef, not a lot. And I don't have a problem with the carnivore diet either, except not for the long
Yeah,
haul.
long haul. It's well,
Yeah.
because of the, well, it's Weston A. Price.
Yeah, that's it.
Weston A. Price. Yeah, his research was pretty incredible. John the Baptist, locust actually is 40, 50% protein. I don't know if people know that. It's very good, high protein food.
Yeah, you ever tried it?
No, I don't think I will, but I think the what is it, the World Economic Forum wants us to all start eating insects.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's really the thing, is moving more, and you're not carrying extra body weight. I mean, that is huge. And then when you mentioned the processed food, that's actually one of my questions, the truth about cholesterol, because with the refined oils, and you've been, the big thing now is the is it the APOB? APOB, because the APOB is what brings the LDL, the bad cholesterol, which I don't think is bad. It brings that to the repair site, and it repairs the inflammation. And so it's getting blamed for all the problems, but they're not looking at what's causing that damage in the artery.
Cholesterol is not an evil molecule. It's one of the most important molecules in your body.
Every cell needs it. Yeah.
Know, if you take in, if you take in, I don't know, 300 milligrams, your body is going to of cholesterol, your body's going to manufacture another 800 from the liver.
Right.
And it's necessary for all your cell walls. It's necessary for all your steroid hormones. It's for your brain. Oh, and by the way, it's the transport.
It's what?
So,
The transport
lipid
agent?
transport. So that's the cholesterol that we talk about. It's not cholesterol. It's lipoproteins.
Right,
So,
yes.
high density lipoproteins, low density
Yeah.
lipoproteins.
And the high density, just so people know, the high density is what brings the cholesterol back into the liver,
Right.
where the LDL takes the cholesterol out into the bloodstream to repair. And that's why
Right.
it's called the bad cholesterol. And I never understood. I've actually checked my cholesterol once when fasting. It was high. Like, oh my goodness, why is my cholesterol so high when I'm fasting? Well, it's because the liver is already producing. So you have to wonder, all these diets, low fat, instead of these cookies, crackers, all these, the low fat diet craze, getting rid of important monounsaturated, polyunsaturated, getting rid of all these fats, and then now putting in partially hydrogenated oils, aspartame, red dye 40 coloring, monosodium glutamate, and all these things that are not good for the body.
A sticky topic, and most of my colleagues are not going to agree with me on this, but somewhere in the 90s or something, I heard a lecture and they were talking about LDL, and it was up on the big screen, and they were talking about pattern A, large, fluffy, buoyant,
Right.
pattern B, hard, dense. And then I was really confused, and I go, oh my gosh, well, they're both LDL. I thought LDL was all bad.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that, pattern A, a large fluffy buoyant, is driven by fat intake. Pattern B is driven by carb intake. Pattern B is the type that we find oxidized and in the arterial wall.
Okay.
We don't find the pattern A in the wall. So people are a little confused. Well, I heard that, and then I didn't hear anything more about it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, how can we never test for that if pattern B is bad? Why don't we look at that? Well, it turns out if we really did that, a lot of people wouldn't be put on statins. So there are genetic components to this. There are people that produce nothing but A for the most part. And then there's families that just produce B no matter what they do.
Just to bring in a point of clarification, the A is the, when you call it the tighter, more dense particle in the LDL, that's the one causing damage, where the fluffier B is the one that's not.
No, it's the opposite.
Opposite.
The A is large, fluffy.
And
the B is small, hard, dense.
Okay.
So
we could break down those. That would be more advantageous to see exactly what type is in a person's bloodstream.
Right. And so, well, I was a little confused. Well, why haven't I heard anything more about this? But for instance, using an example of a patient that came into me, she says, well, I know you're going to want to put me on a statin because everyone wants to put me on. She's 35 years old. Her cholesterol is a little over 400 and her LDL was 256. And
That's up there.
So I said, well, I understand. So tell me this, does anyone else in your family have high cholesterol? And she goes, everyone. I go, everyone? She goes, everyone. Next question. Is there heart disease? She goes, not a soul. Extended family? No. So I said, well, we have to break down your cholesterol. Yeah. And so she comes back. I know I mentioned this to you before, the NMR lipoprofile.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. So that's breaking it down into the particles. And so her LDL particle was somewhere around 2000, and that's a really high number, by the way. That's very high. And of her pattern B was about 78, and the rest of all those were all A. Now, if you get below about, I think it's about 550 or something like that on your B, mm-hmm. you're doing good. Anyway, she's at 78.
Wow.
Okay. Her average particle size for LDL, this is all comers. She was slammed up against the wall over here. I've never seen someone with a particle size that high. So it was all pattern A. So no wonder.
And just to clarify, because a lot of people, you know, they're not quite sure what we're talking about. The bottom line is, although she had high cholesterol, when you broke down the particle sizes, it was actually the type of cholesterol that's not binding to the artery walls. So she probably wouldn't. Yeah. That's why heart disease doesn't run in her family.
Yeah. And the other factor is that the LDL pattern B isn't really a problem until it gets oxidized.
And oxidized is when it is oxidative stress, when it's...
Well, oxidative stress, yeah, oxidation is rust. But if you have free radicals...
Oh, yeah.
Through your blood, that's going to oxidize. So,
bad food is free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deep fried foods. You can take a group of 10-year-olds and you can go to their classroom and you can do a little Doppler on their artery and check their blood flow.
Yeah.
And you break the group into twos where, half are going to go out and eat,
candy.
No, a big extra serving size of fries.
Okay.
Out of Wendy's or McDonald's, wherever. And the other group is just going to get the equivalent in the vegetable oil. And of those too, which one's going to have a change in their blood flow? Well, after 2 hours, you measure their Doppler and you're going to see the little, you know, flow. Mm-hmm. And the group with the fries has dropped down about 30% or so in their blood flow. And the other group hasn't changed any. Okay, why? That's acute endothelial oxidative stress.
Of these oils from the fries.
Uh-huh. And so you're scouring your million miles of blood vessels with free radicals. Now, what does that do to the endothelial cells? Well, they can't release nitric oxide.
Right. And just so people know, the endothelial cells are the cells within the lining of the arteries.
Right. I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah. I'm just trying to bring it down to the
right. So the endothelial
level,
inside the arteries. And the endothelial cells, they release nitric oxide, which, you know, that relaxes.
Good, yeah.
Nitric oxide, so it's released with Viagra, okay?
Yeah.
It causes dilation of blood flow. So anyway.
And I want to pause for a minute because I think this is one of the most critical points you've made. With the French fries, different things, those chemicals, the way the carbohydrates are even produced, the sodium, it's not even normal sodium, the type, all of that now that's in your blood is basically, it reminds me of sandpaper kind of going through and damaging the artery walls. So I think it's important for people. That's why bad food, where if you take a grass-fed buffalo with some avocado, that fat is just, it's more smooth and it's not causing the damage, the sandpaper against the artery walls. I mean, that is, I hope that gives people that vision.
That's a good analogy. Yeah. You've got blood flowing through your arteries at lickety split, I mean, it's very fast flowing, and you've got to have smooth arteries. You have to have no defects. Otherwise you get flow imbalances. So anything happens where you get a ding in that wall, the body's going to try and repair itself.
Yeah.
And this is part of where the cholesterol and entering the picture. Cholesterol isn't the perpetrator of the crime. He's at the scene of the crime. You know, he might be a getaway. He's a getaway driver. But
I like that analogy because everyone makes it the bad guy there. You know.
Yeah, and it looks like it's more of a part of a healing response. So the problem isn't cholesterol. It's well, how did we get there in the first place? And then you have the glycocalyx. I think that's what it's called. It's the coating on the inside of your arteries, and it's a protein in glyco, and it might have a sugar component, but it's kind of like a film. So if you pick up a fish out of the water, what do you notice first?
Yeah, the slippery.
It's slimy. Okay. Well, that slime enables that fish to go through the water.
Right.
Okay. That's what's lining all of your arteries.
Right.
Okay. And so, well, what can damage that? Okay, you know, the bad food. But if you have high sugar levels, especially diabetics, it thins out that glycocalyx. And that glycocalyx acts as a protection, a protecting factor. And if you thin that out or really get it down, you're much more apt to damage the arterial wall. So you end up having the little dings, nicks, maybe at the bifurcations.
Right.
So anyway, back to that whole picture with LDL and the fractions of that. If we were to look at what statins do, statins will lower both kinds, but they actually lower A more than B. And
we want that. Yeah.
Okay, well, the A is driven by fat, but we have been driven to believe that, okay, fat is what causes heart disease. Okay, so you know this, and I think I mentioned it in the book as well, and that was dealing with the 7-country study.
Yep. Definitely.
And, you know, I brought up that, you know, Menotti, who was one of the co-authors, the Italian, he went back in, I think it was 99, and he looked at their data. Well, they really hadn't looked at their carb data. They were so focused on proving that saturated fat was the causative factor that they never looked at their carb data. So 78, 99, okay, so 21 years later, he goes back and looks at their data and says, oh my gosh, small correlate with the fat, large correlate with the carbs. Okay, and so you never heard about that. The public didn't hear about that.
What would that mean to the common person that the carbs, too many carbs were driving?
Right. So, well, going back to, the mid 60s, we started coming into this idea and they were debating it and they didn't know which way it was going to go. Is it the carbs or is it the fat? And there were people that had the idea was the carbs, but Ansel Keys, who was behind that study, he firmly believed it was all about the fat, and the saturated fat caused it. So he set that study up, and I looked at the study, and I looked at some data prior to the study, and I know that he kind of cherry picked the countries. Yeah. He eliminated two of the countries in Europe that had the highest consumption of saturated fat. Mm. They also had the lowest incidence of heart disease.
Yeah.
France and even the French smoked more than the rest of Europe.
Right.
But they had the lowest heart disease.
Right.
And the highest saturated fat. And Germany was a follow up to that.
Because we mentioned antioxidants. Oh, I'm sorry. Do you have a closing point on that one?
Well. Anyway, the sugar council, they paid a lot of money. They buried the
evidence.
The guy that had the study over in the UK. Showing just the opposite, and everyone went along with this mantra that, you know, saturated fat is bad and it causes heart disease, and there you go. But at the same time, we knew about the Eskimos and their 80% fat intake, saturated fat on top of that, whale blubber, seal blubber, and they have no heart disease. And they don't have stroke risk. Well, they have minimal thromboembolic stroke risk. Ours is over 700% above theirs. And heart disease, it really doesn't exist. But if you take them off the tundra and you feed them our diet.
Here it comes, yeah.
Yeah, and within 10 years, they're having heart attacks and strokes.
So if I went back to the best diet that we initially started to talk about, it would say, obviously, what works for a person, but enough whole plant-based food, you know, the veggies and the fruit, you know, in moderation, of course, but also to possibly bring in some clean meat, a little bit of clean dairy, and then get more active. Basically, good food in moderation and more activity.
Yeah. Right.
You. Okay.
Right. Yeah. I don't tell my patients. I always tell them, look, I'm not telling you to eat like an Eskimo.
Right. Oh, yeah.
You don't have to do that. But I will tell them, the culprit isn't what they make them out to be. The fat isn't the problem. Now, there are good fats and bad fats.
Right.
And no, you don't need so much saturated fat. And not all saturated fat is the same. But I try to get a moderation. So, okay, the meat, the vegetables, the fruits, the nuts, the seeds, I try to get a balance. I'm pretty much more of a Mediterranean type. Except I don't hold to the Mediterranean diet that most Americans think is a Mediterranean diet.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at whole foods. I'm looking at the foods. They're not processed food. They're not made up food. I'm trying to get as much natural whole food as I can.
Right.
But everything's in balance. And
that's the key.
And as I mentioned, man is very, very versatile. They can adapt and like the sweet potatoes.
and you mentioned earlier so people know free radicals are they're missing, was it a proton or something? And so they're balanced.
It's an electron unpaired.
Electron, yeah, unpaired. And so they're bouncing around and we've got all these free radicals. And what you mentioned is that this type of diet is actually very high in antioxidants. So the antioxidants give that free radical, they help balance out that, it's not a free radical anymore. It becomes very stable. And so all this food that we're eating, the Doritos and the Dr. Pepper and the even bread, just normal bread, crackers, cookies, I mean, just about 90% of what we're eating is processed food, which is delivering even more free radicals into the body. And so we can easily
Right. Yeah. And if I can take a step back, you know, to the mid 60s when this debate was going on, they started telling people fat was bad. Okay. Mm-hmm. So fat was dropped out at your little pie graph, proteins, fats, carbs. The fats were shrunk, so the vacuum was filled in immediately with carbs. And you can plot it out. You can see the diabetes going up and the heart disease going up and hypertension is part of heart disease. You start seeing the cancer go up. You start seeing everything go up, including Alzheimer's dementia, which is related to its type 3 diabetes, insulin resistance.
Right. Absolutely.
That's not the cause of Alzheimer's. It's one of the big factors that feeds the whole thing. But the diet kept changing, and we thought, it was going to be better, but it never stopped. Even when they brought to the attention, I remember in 2002, they came out with the International Congress of Diabetologists. They said, wow, if we don't do something, the kids born this year, by the time they reach adulthood, we're going to have huge numbers, up to, 30, 40, 50% are going to be diabetic. Well, those kids from 2002, now they've reached adulthood.
Yep.
Okay. And guess what? Now we're looking at, easily 50, 52% of the U.S. population is diabetic or pre-diabetic.
Right.
And then say, well, pre-diabetes isn't diabetes. Well, I beg to differ. It is.
It shows all the signs.
We didn't know when we determined, say a hemoglobin A1C of 6.5 is, that's the number right there. That's when you become a diabetic, and we'll give you your certificate there. But the pathology starts back at pre-diabetes, 5.7 to 6.4. And the prime driver of coronary artery disease happens to be insulin resistance.
Yeah, so true.
The APOE4 gene that is driving Alzheimer's, it also drives coronary artery disease. It's linked with that. Well, both of them have in common insulin resistance.
Talk a little bit about fasting and replacement therapy, hormone replacement therapy. And it might be good to mention too that you're the type of practice you do, you don't take on new clients, because I can imagine, people after hearing this are wanting to get in touch with you, but I think you're more dealing with specialty type issues now, correct?
I don't have an open practice.
Okay.
And no, I'm happy to, I'm happy to do this, and I'm happy.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. This should help. And a lot of people cause I help a lot of people with health and nutrition too. Obviously not knowing as much as a doctor, I'm kind of know a lot about a lot of different things. If they can begin eating healthy, moderation, cutting out sugar, even intermittent fasting, getting active and start to really take care of the body, a lot of their issues, that's the core of it. I think a lot of us know that, but we want that pill. If I can just take that pill, then I can enjoy, all these other things.
Right. And that's what we've kind of been indoctrinated, in the sense that, the answer to everything medically is pill. And yet that's a paradigm I try to get my patients to break, because that's not real at all. We were, the whole pharmaceutical industry isn't interested in any of this.
Right.
There's so much money invested in the food industry and the pharmaceutical industry. The doctors out there, rank and file, are never going to receive any of this. They're not going to hear this.
Right.
Is it being taught in the medical schools? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. There's a few exceptions, but to this degree, no.
And there's a lot of, I mean, people waking up, you know, Peter Attia, Dr. I think it's Paul Saladino, you know, of course, yourself, a lot of the videos, Ben Greenfield, Gary Brecka, Huberman, his podcast, and, you know, it's getting the message out there. Touch my lips,
here I am. If you've enjoyed this episode of Eidelman Unplugged, be sure to send us your ideas and topics for future episodes of the podcast. You can send us an email at westsidechristianfellowship.org or shaneeidelman.com. Thank you for listening to us today, and join us again on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to Eidelman Unplugged. For more information, visit us at shaneeidelman.com. Again, that's shaneeidelman.com.
El Paseo Publications proudly supports the Westside Christian Fellowship Radio Network. We are committed to quality in Christian publication. Free ebooks can be found at westsidechristianfellowship.org under free ebooks. Books such as What Works for Men and What Works for Young Adults will help readers understand that the obstacles ahead are never greater than God's power to take you through. Books such as What Works When Diets Don't and Feasting and Fasting demonstrate how health can be achieved from a biblical perspective. Other free books such as Answers for a Confused Church and Desperate for More of God show the importance of fully surrendering our lives to Christ. And One Nation Above God is a must-read for anyone concerned about the direction of America. Again, free downloads of these ebooks are available at westsidechristianfellowship.org. We are happy about partnering with the Westside Christian Fellowship Radio Network.